is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Secretary of State Mr. Blinken traveling to Europe. Traveling to Europe for what appears to be a crisis meeting, series of meetings with the Russian Federation and NATO and Ukraine about the crisis at hand. I welcome Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired CBS News. He's a visiting professor of international security at Dickinson College. And he's here to apprise us of, first, of what we know about Ukraine crisis, and then about what NATO is doing in these anxious days to prepare for the worst-case scenario and to hold together its presentation of alliance to the Russian Federation. Jeff, a very good evening to you. I go to the New York Times headline in these last hours. As U.S. and Russia prepare to talk, Blinken pushes back on Kremlin demand. Subhead, the U.S. Secretary of State met with Ukraine's president, Mr. Zelensky, and said he had no plans to meet Russia's insistence on a written diplomatic proposal on its demands for European security. That was one of the Russian demands, a major one. They won veto on who can and who cannot join NATO. There are others, however, a rollback of military infrastructure to the 97 NATO and other demands made by the Russian Federation in these last days with what I can see is at this point no negotiation. So let us go to the battlefield as we understand it, the potential battlefield of a catastrophe. The Russian Federation has been moving troops around dramatically these last days. There's a what is called a snap exercise in Belarus, and the reports of rail traffic rolling from the east. What can you tell us, Jeff, about the battlefield if it comes?
The battlefield, as it comes, John, could come from many different directions. As you suggested, there's been announced exercises between Russian and Belarusian troops. They'll begin on the 10th of February, and the movement of Russian forces to prepare for that. That could be a precondition for an invasion coming from the north, because the border with Belarus is only 110 miles from Kiev. In addition, along the eastern frontier, where the rebels hold two provinces supported by the Russians and have about 35,000 troops of their own there, supported by Russian troops on the ground, Russia has put in a vast array of battalions to the point that many people think overall about 30% of all Russian tactical battalions are now deployed. And that number could increase dramatically over the coming weeks as they're now shifting forces from the Far East moving in this direction. And then in the south, of course, the Russians still maintain substantial military forces in Crimea. And the last week, we've seen disturbing movement of Russian naval vessels moving out of the Baltic Sea, particularly amphibious vessels. And if they were to move into the Black Sea, it would expand the already pretty large Russian amphibious capability, which would allow the Russians perhaps to advance into Ukraine from the south. So the Russians could, in fact, then attack the Ukraine from three directions: north from Belarus, east from Russia proper, and south from Crimea, while at the same time combining that with cyber attacks, electronic warfare assaults, and I think a lot of use of long-range fires, either missiles or artillery, to destroy any type of response by Ukrainian forces.
Jeff, over these last days, I've been compiling anecdotes, and I want to list them because they don't add up to anything, but they're puzzling. For example, you and I have exchanged thoughts about this. There was a report of Russian warships leaving the Baltic Sea. The Baltic Sea is home waters for the Northern Fleet, well, at least parts of the Northern Fleet out of now Petersburg, but it also connects to Kaliningrad, the exclave that's behind the Baltic states. There have been reports of tearful farewells between families and Russian warriors leaving we don't know. Are they going to Belarus? Are they going to Ukraine? Are they going to the barracks? But in any event, I checked that in Moscow, and it is confirmed that these tearful farewells are being broadcast or being conveyed to the Russian people. Then we have these reports of units moving from Siberia or from the Far East to the West. Now, is that consistent with normal behavior? I don't know. I don't follow the Russian military. But we also have this exercise in Belarus that you mentioned. The reason that triggers a memory of mine is that during the Cuban Missile Crisis, which I've been reading about a lot these days, because it was an exchange of threats and then an exchange of concessions that eased the tension in between Kennedy and Khrushchev. the Pentagon prepared Operation Ortsak, Castro backwards, isn't that clever, for exercises in Puerto Rico, anticipating that they could be called upon for an invasion of Cuba. It didn't happen. We avoided the nuclear conflict. That's what Belarus reminded me of. Are these exercises, because you've served, Jeff, you know that you're moving large amounts of men and women and material, and you're coordinating all this, and you have to feed it at the end of the day. Does this all add up to one thing, or is this something that we can pass off as general winter exercises?
No, we can't make this general winter exercises due to the size of the forces being deployed. This may well now add up to being the largest deployment of Russian forces in one concentrated area in the post-Soviet era. It is that particularly large. And you're quite right. And historically, many countries have used such exercises and plans to mass preparation for an invasion. And also, you can only sustain these things so long in the field. We saw this oftentimes, Russians watching us do our major reforger exercises, which they were worried at times were a precursor to invasion. So I think all these things add up to a very high probability that the Russians are moving in the direction of a physical military assault on the Ukraine. In fact, I'm beginning to worry Mr. Putin may have painted himself into a corner by moving so many military forces and positioning them so close to the border and making the threats, most of which are non-starters with the West, that he's made. Can he now accept an off-ramp of some arms control negotiations or something from the West without losing credibility in the eyes of the oligarchs and his own countrymen, absent some type of major concession or outright surrender by the West, which I hardly think NATO or the Biden administration will provide?
We have from the New York Times an unusual statement that looks on the face of it to be a certainty from the Russian foreign minister. The deputy foreign minister, Sergei Ryabkov, who's a veteran, who's very experienced, like Mr. Lavrov. He said, Russia, will not attack, strike, invade, quote, unquote, whatever, Ukraine. 100,000 troops or more at the Ukraine border, gathering of forces in Belarus. Is there anything else we should be watching for? Movements of the satellites, air probes, drones over the borderland, anything that would tell you, Jeff, that we're getting closer to a jump-off point or not?
Well, the things we're seeing right now as they continue to build, such things as a wider disinformation campaign, we've seen one that will likely expand. And that happens on both sides of the border. Some of those social media videos of Russian mothers crying as their sons left are meant for domestic consumption and disinformation in Russia, where the vast majority of the population, based on polls, believe this whole crisis is, in fact, brought about by the United States and the West. Greater electronic warfare program, greater cyber attacks. A real concern, the White House brought this up this week, that they believe the Russians may be planning a so-called false flag exercise. Some type of an event in the Ukraine would suggest to them that the Ukrainians are going to attack, which the Russians have said they worry about, and that then is used as a pretext to actually invade the Ukraine. Don't forget, John, in 1939, the Germans tried to make the world believe that the Poles had invaded Germany. And that's why in September 1939, Adolf Hitler launched the Second World War.
Yes, I puzzled about Mr. Ryabkov. Attack, strike, invade, quote unquote, whatever, Ukraine. That leaves out self-defense, which is what a false flag operation is all about. Within these last hours, we've had a report from Great Britain that the anti-tank missiles have been sent from the British arsenal to Ukraine. Is that of significance, Jeff? I mean, we're looking at major weapon systems here. So a man pad doesn't seem like much to stand up against the weight of the Russian air-land sea battle.
Well, it certainly doesn't seem like a great deal, and it presupposes a major invasion. Let's take this apart for a second. Yes, more anti-tank weapons has been something the Ukrainians have requested, as well as greater air defense. Both can be characterized as more defensive systems and then less provocative to the Russians. But this also presupposes a major land invasion. And though all that might occur based on the forces that Mr. Putin has arrayed, it seems to me now, John, there may be three possible options the Russians are considering in the military sphere. One would be a large-scale invasion, which might move to Kiev, take down the capital, and install, in essence, a puppet government. In that case, those anti-tank weapons would be very useful. The second would be a short land grab, perhaps into the Donbass and, and Luhansk region, where rebels who are pro-Moscow are already present, which would undermine at least the credibility of the government in Kiev. That could be combined with a land grab of a land bridge to Crimea. And then the third option would be just a massive strike on Ukrainian forces using long-range fires, electronic warfare, and cyber, basically to render those forces, if you will, totally inert, while not exercising a lot of occupation of territory that might bring on bloodletting and might not bring on, from the Russian eyes at least, lots of civilian casualties that might bring down the Zelensky government and allow a government more favorable to Moscow to come to power in Kiev.
The Secretary of State has said, and this is a quote, that Russia might attack at very short notice. Does it have significance, Jeff, that what we have is forces who can be given an order to go and they can do it in an hour? Is it that short?
I think it's a matter of hour. I think it would be a matter of hours. And that also is a function of which one of those particular options you exercise. You could do just a selective strike on a particular area. The Russians have been very concerned, for example, that the Ukrainians have acquired a certain number of the drones from Turkey, the same drones that the Azerbaijanis used against Armenia so successful, and took out at least one artillery position in those rebel areas in eastern Ukraine. Might the Russians do a quick strike against that particular artillery unit and take it out just to demonstrate their capabilities? That could be done very quickly. A larger scale effort, amount of hours to coordinate activities, final positioning of forces, disbursement of planning, and making sure all logistics are in place before a major undertaking began.
I'm speaking to Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News, U.S. Army retired. We're looking at what we know of the battlefield, if it comes, of Ukraine. There is another large topic here that's going to last much longer than the deployment this winter, and that is NATO, how it's functioning. Jeff is a veteran of NATO, how it's expected to function when we come back. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.